So the second Mishnah in the third parak of Maseches Rosh Hashanah begins the discussion of the Heftza of the Shofar. And it begins with telling us that Kol HaShofros Ksherim, fundamentally it's the default is that most Shofros are Kosher, except for the Shofar of a Para. In the Mishnah itself, we have, first of all, the dissenting opinion of Rabbi Yossi. But what we're going to be focusing on is the opinion lahalacha, the opinion of the Chachamim, that the shofar is pasul. In the Mishnah itself, we have one reason, which is kind of a formal reason, that the Torah refers to that as a keren, quote unquote, and in fact, what's required for the mitzvah is something that's called a shofar, quote unquote. As you know, if you've seen the Gemara, Rabbi Yossi has a pretty strong argument to counter that. And in fact, there are two other reasons given in the Amoraim for the psul of the shofar shel para. The second one, which seems to be the main one, is ein kategor nasa sanegor, something that reminds Hashem of sin and shame for the Jewish people. It cannot be the basis of our getting forgiveness, certainly on a day like Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. And then there's the third reason that's given towards the end of the Gemara from Abaye, that a shofar shel para grows in such a way that it actually is recognizable as if it were multiple shofars. Of course, it's all one shofar, but since the growth of each year is recognizable, that looks like shnei or shalosh shofros, and the drasha tells us it has to be shofar in the singular. One obvious point, which I mentioned in the Makaros from the Ritva, who's really basing himself on the Ramban, which really, if you think about it, it's a double take when you first see the Gemara, which is if the Mishnah itself gave us a reason for the Chachamim, so what are the Amoraim adding? We already have a reason in the Tanaim, in the Mishnah, for why Shofar Shapara should be Puzzle. So why do we have Ula and then Abaya giving us additional reasons? And the Ritva says, basically, from the Ramban, that on the fund, even though that's in the Tanaim, the Amoraim basically felt that on that level, Rabbi Yossi seemed to have at least defended himself, if not bested the Chachamim. They weren't really convinced. The same arguments Rabbi Yossi uses, the Amoraim who don't agree with Rabbi Yossi, they agree with the Chachamim that you can't use the Shofar Shel Para, but they really feel that that's not really the strongest reason. So that's just a striking thing. You don't have that often. I'm not enough of a bucky to tell you how many times or to tell you with confidence it never happened, but I can't remember offhand where you have something like that, where you have a reason given for something so explicit in the Mishnah and that it just seems to be ignored by the Amoraim. And then, of course, you have these Rishonim explaining why. So that's just kind of a little bit of the basics. So I wanted to mention a few Ha'aras, which, again, some of you may have figured out on your own. You've seen it on your own. But just to make sure we're all on the same page, a few Ha'aras, and we'll organize the rest of this year based on these three stages of the Gemara. The first stage that assumes that the problem with Shofar Shel Para is that it's a Keren, or not a Shofar, as the case may be. We'll see in a moment. Number one. Number two, the issue of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. And then, if we have some time at the end, just a little Ha'ara, 3 minutes, on the issue of Shofar Echad Velo Shofros. So the first issue, again, the one that's in the Mishnah, and then the first stage of the Gemara, is based on this Chisaron being Keren or non-Shofar. So, first of all, as I'm stumbling over that formulation myself, what I'm alluding to, as you know, is the fact that this seems to be a Machlokas Rishonim. It's hard to know how significant this is. Maybe I'm just, I mean, it's not me. The Rishonim do have different formulations, but maybe I'm harping on it too much. But if you read Rashi carefully, Rashi there, right in the beginning, in Shehu Keren, Rashi says, what's the problem? What was the problem with Shofar Shel Para? The Eino Kari Shofar. Right? Being a Shofar is a positive Hechsher. Since it's not, quote, a Shofar, it lacks that hashkacha. In other words, the default sounds like from Rashi that you're puzzle unless shofar is attached to you. It's like a brand name, right? You feel good about yourself, you're a shofar. However, the Ritva seems to have a different perspective, and he comes at it, again, this is based on the Ramban, from a very, again, it's the best kind of lumdus is one that's not only conceptually fascinating, but also as tight as possible to the text. So the Ramban and the Ritva are bothered by a seeming contradiction of a very close reading of the Mishnah, right? On the one hand, the Mishnah says, Kol HaShofros Chutz Mishel Para. So what does that imply? That Para is a shofar or not? It is. It's possible, but it is a shofar, because it's included in kol ha-shofros. However, the Ritva says, by the fact that it says, chutz mishel para, b'pnei shu keren, sounds like it's not. It's b'pnei shu keren. Well, is it because it's a shofar but some other problem, or is it because it's a keren? So right away, the Ritva and the Ramban are bothered by just the close approach of the Mishnah. And based on that, the Ritva quotes the Ramban, very, very fascinating, that fundamentally there are two separate issues. Really, it's like a brisker Ramban and Ritva right out of the chute. Says the Ritva, there are two issues. One is the metzias, or the form of the horn, and the other is the shame. Right, we're used to sometimes the achronim or our rebbeim talking about formal categories and achalos shame. But here you have it, the feirish achronim themselves. So here is where we have an idea. I think some of you took a minute to figure this out. The rishonim speak about interesting imagery, zacharus and nekevus, or however you exactly would pronounce that. That is to say that when it comes to the physical form of horns of different animals, the rishonim say that there are two types. There are those which are purely solid. Now, in theory, the Gemara is going to say in another daf, you could drill those too. But naturally, they angle solid. Others, like an aisle, like the ideal kosher shofros, grow as kind of a sleeve, which is referred to in the language of the Mishnayot, as the Rishonim, as the feminine part of it. But then, as it's growing, something else, a little bit softer, I guess, but some other material grows to fill that in. So when you look at the ram's horn, it looks like a solid, but it's actually not. It's this outer sheath or sleeve and something, the masculine part, on the inside. So says the Ramban, to be called a shofar, to meet the physical requirements of a shofar, it has to be dual components. It has to have these two, and then to make the shofar, you know, the guy who knows what he's doing, hollows it out. If it's one solid form, that's what's called a keren. That's not called a shofar. That's not work. That's not even nothing to talk about. Then there's a second point, which is even if you have these two components, the sheath and the filling, then you have a second point, which is formally, what is it categorized by the Torah? Is it called a keren or is it called a shofar? To be kosher, it needs to be called a shofar. So that is like the big picture that the Ramban and the Ritva tell us. How does that relate to us? So that's how they read the Mishnah. Kol hashofros ksherim chutz mishel para. Didn't that imply, Natan said correctly, that that was referring to a para? Isn't that a call to shofar? The answer is yes, say the Rishonim. Midin, the physical part. Because a para also has these two components, the outer and the inner. If it would be just that alone, it would be fine. It's a shofar in that sense. However, in the end, say the chavim is possible, because despite its physical attributes, which are Beseder Gamor, wonderful, but in the end it falls short because of the other issue, the formal categorization, Ikri Keren. In other words, what comes out according to the Ritva? What's the psul? Not like Rashi that it's not a shofar. Adraba, in terms of the physical Metzius, it is a shofar. But that in its formal status, it is a Keren. So is the issue that it's not a shofar or that it is a Keren? It seems to me that is a machlokus, one second, between the Rashi and the Ritva. What would be, then again, could be that I'm making too much, I mean, just knowing how the Ritva and the Ramban not only read the Mishnah, but tell us about these all these species, that is important. That I'm not making too, that is a, clearly an important Ritva and Ramban. Whether contrasting that with Rashi is being too picayune or we really have something, I'm not 100% sure, but certainly a nafkamina could be, what's an obvious nafkamina? Don't ask me, I'm not Natan Slifkin, although he lives in my neighborhood. I don't know all the animals to know if there is such a thing or what would be a good example of this. But in theory, at least, it would come out in Afkimina. Let's say you have something which has the physical attributes, the double, right? May not be called a shofar anywhere, but it's also not called a keren. So that would be, if such a thing exists, that's right on the fault line between Rashi and the Ritva. According to Rashi, it's still not called a shofar, it would be posel. According to Ritva, but it wasn't called a keren, and it has the physical attributes, so maybe it would be kosher, yeah.
I don't fully understand the Ritva and the Ramban's way of saying because it's called the keren, it's posel. The Gemara says the reason why it doesn't, the Gemara said that the para keren akri shofar lo akri. The Gemara could have just said the para keren akri. But it has to say, and shofar lo akri.
And it has to say that because for the rest of the animals, keren akri does shofar akri.
Right.
So then how do the Ritva and the Ramban say that any horn is kosher if they're all called keren?
Look, it doesn't. They don't say any horn. We know that there are some that aren't. Again, their point.
So, like, if every animal's horn is called a keren and a shofar, and it's,
well, again, the Gemara itself ends up saying that kol a shofar is ikri keren, vi ikri shofar.
Right. So then, how is a ram's horn kosher?
Again, so again, on the issue, I think where you're getting, for sake of time, if this doesn't help you, we'll just talk after this year. But I think what you're getting caught up on is that there are parts of the Gemara and the Rishonim that discuss, even within the category of the shame, the formal category, you know, the formal title. So is a para, you know, that's Rabbi Yossi's argument. But Adaraba, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. That's an American idiom, I guess. At least some people in the room get that, or maybe everybody. Okay, even better. So you know, after all, aren't there psukim that do seem to refer to a para as a shofar, or do seem to refer to everything as a keren? In other words, that's kind of, from Rabbi Yossi's perspective, all the waters are muddled. He doesn't really think this is so clear. But at least within the Chachamim, the Ramban and the Ritva say really there are two criteria. There is the physical fact and the technical name. All right, if that's not satisfactory, we'll talk about it later. Okay, anyway, that's all Aleph. Bet on this is the discussion I hope you saw in Tosfos. Right? There are a lot of Tosfos in, but the one in particular that I wanted you to concentrate on is in Dibur Maschil Chutz, which asks about the mysterious Re'im animal from the Torah, Karne Re'im. Exactly what that is, I don't know what the Re'im is. Does anyone know what the Re'im is?
A wild oryx.
A wild ox, oryx, antelope. All right, we got three possibilities now. Oh, okay. Anyway.
Wikipedia says oryx.
Okay. We always go with Wikipedia.
JPS is wild ox.
Well, oh, there you go. Okay. So, starting with Tosfos, a lot of the Rishonim are bothered when we say Chutz Mishel Para sounds like only Para is disqualified. Ask Tosfos, well, what about the Re'im? Isn't that possible for the same reason? Karne Re'im, it's also referred to as a Keren. So Tosfos' answer seems to be straightforward, although we'd still have to think about it. But if you had a chance to see the Ramban, it's the one Ramban I put on the sheet, the Ramban himself has a completely different understanding of the Tosfos than I think is the simple understanding of Tosfos. But Tosfos themselves say, you see the last line of Dibur Maschil Chutz, what's the reason why the Gemara, or the Mishnah, I should say, didn't mention it? Shema einam chalulim, they're not hollow, meaning they don't have this dual, the sheath and the filling. Ve'einam ru'uyim l'shofar. So how do you understand that line? So what do you guys think? What's the pashtus of Tosfos? Right. You're both, I think, saying the same thing. I'll just put it in my words. It's more fundamentally disqualified than even a para. As a para, in theory, has the two parts. It has the softer filling, which you can hollow out. Whereas the re'im is not hollow. It's that one solid. So it's even worse than para, right? That's, I would say, the simple reading of Tosfos. And if you're interested and you want to look it up, the Sfasemes in our Gemara reads it that way as well, as does the Minchas Chinuch. Many, many Rishonim understand that to be the answer to the question, although they're not convinced that that's necessarily what Tosos meant.
Tosos himself is clearly not convinced, like, oh, Shema, it's this.
No, when I say they're not convinced, I mean it might be a Shema of something else. I'll see what you see what I mean in a second. So many other Rishonim, if you saw the Ritva, the Ran, and the Ramban, if you saw it, they all say this answer. They say this answer, that there's no hava meaning even about their aim. It's more fundamentally disqualified because it is not in this hollow form.
I thought the Ritva says that it's disqualified not just because it's less common. It's equal to para, but they...
So the Ritva quotes that. The Ramban also quotes that. But that's what they are attributing to Tosfos, and then they give their own reason. Okay? So the first reason, which is either what Tosfos meant, and certainly what the majority of the other Rishonim say, is that it's more fundamentally disqualified. Added to that, if you want, some people, if you like etymology, the Rishonim here tell us, I mentioned, you saw the Ran. The Ran says, to prove this point, the shofar is milashon, shofares, which means like a tube. So that indicates, you see, that that's an essential definition of shofar. And therefore, anything that's not hollow, i.e. the aim, is so fundamentally disqualified. The Ritva may have that in mind when the Ritva says, what is shofar? It's like mishupar. It's milashon hidur, takun. Probably similar to this idea of the of the run. And this is all their understanding of why the Re'im is not even mentioned, because it didn't even have to be mentioned. It's so obviously disqualified.
One of the funders in the Ritva, in the Masorah Ritva, mentions that idea of the Shoferet.
Yes, so that's quoting from the Shoferet Lashon is actually in the run. Right, I think it was footnote 110, if I'm not mistaken. But there's an important footnote. Footnote 110 is important in the Ritva. Anyway, why am I mentioning this? Because the Ramban and the Ritva, Tai, which you quoted, they understand Tosfos themselves to be something different. Einam Re'uyim, they understand to mean not common. Now, whether that means the Re'im is an uncommon animal, or it was just uncommon to turn its horns into a shofar, I'm not 100% clear, but it's more of a metzius. It's not something fundamental. The Lashon of the Rishonim, again, whether this is what Tosfos meant, or that's a straw man, and it's just a theoretical opinion, I'm not sure, but they do think the Ritva for sure, and the Ramban thinks it's for sure this is Tosfos, and he doesn't like it. But what they say is, really, Charak Amar, it's not any worse, it's the same. It's the same as Para. It's no better, it's no worse. It's disqualified, but for that same technical reason. Tosfos is a big question, why wasn't it quoted? Well, I have to tell you everything. I'm telling you the most common thing. Para is a more likely candidate and is puzzle. But once you know the more likely candidate is puzzle, the thing which has the same criteria is going to be puzzle as well. Anyway, Adkan, this is the first big stage. Again, I think this is the part that most of you, some of you may have gotten further in the Makaros, but I think most of you were able to get through these part of the Makaros. This is the issue in step one of the Gemara, the issue of the formal Karen versus Shofar. Then we had Ula telling us a second answer, which is Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. We only have a little more than 10 minutes left, so we'll just do the Rashi Prakim. But just so you should know, if you're interested, there's a lot more. It's a very rich topic. If you're interested in just in some independent learning, this past Shabbos in my community, I gave it a 45-minute shiur just on Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. Not just on our Gemara, but Hamistaif, the bigger topic that flows from our Gemara. So there's a lot more, but just some of the Rashi Prakim as they specifically relate to Shofar, or some, I can't resist, some a little bit expanded issues. So if you had a chance to at least go through the Gemara, you saw a very fascinating Gemara, which, based on this idea of the big day Kohen Gadol, right, there's this tremendous paradox, right, that he has his special big day Zahav, and Dafka, when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where you'd expect he'd have his fanciest clothing, the Kohen Gadol, we know, I mean, this is already Psukim in the Torah, the Kohen Gadol has to wear only his four plain big day Lavan. Why is that? So the Gemara tells us the idea of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, gold reminds us of the Egel. So the Egel was two things. It was gold and it was an Egel. So therefore the second answer says anything, even not gold. If you blow a shofar from a para is just a form of an Egel, a bigger Egel. So that is going to remind Hashem. So here we are trying to remind Hashem for our Zechuyah to get forgiven, to get blessed with a good year, and we're going to remind him of the Egel, Gevalt. What a terrible, terrible thing. So the Gemara proceeds to think about that and say, well, one second. There's so many parts of the Beis HaMikdash, either the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash or the furniture, the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, which seem to violate that principle left and right. You have the various blood work, the blood splatters that comes from the par, so the Gemara has an answer for that. Then the Gemara asks, well, what about the Aron, right? There's gold everywhere, the Kruvim, there's gold everywhere. So what's the Gemara's answer for that? Chote Baal Yakriv, right? Only someone gets brought into the Beis HaMikdash by the Kohen Gadol, presumably as a form of kapara. Only that is the problem. You're trying to get forgiveness. You're bringing it in. But something that Hashem himself deigned it to be part of the furniture, so Hashem put that in. Now, you can't put it in because it reminds him of what you did wrong. But when Hashem says that should just be permanently part of the furniture, that's not a problem. Then there was, okay, well, what about the Kafu Machta? So that is something that we do bring in, and that's also gold. So Gemara says, Chote Baal. It's not right. You can't beautify yourself, adorn yourself with like the Kohen Gadol's golden clothes, is making himself look nice. So that would be a problem. But the Kafu Machta is just something you need. It's a ladle, right? It's like your Weber's grill thing. I mean, it's just something you need to bring, you know, to bring it in. So that would not be a problem of that. And then the Gemara says, well, even that. Let's one second. Where did we start all this from? We started from the shofar. What is this? You know, the shofar is mibachutz. What happened here? So the Gemara answers in the end, it's true, you generally need only things that are lifnim, but a shofar, the power of the shofar, it's delizikaron, it's to remind Hashem of our merits, to remind him of us. Therefore, kilifnim dame. The shofar creates an intimate bond with Hashem, and therefore we have the problem. I just want to go till the end, just because we're gonna. I don't want to hold you guys too long, but we're running up against our self-imposed deadline soon. So if you can wait, if you can't, then I'll stop. But if not, then let me just try to get a little further. So you basically have three things in the Gemara. There seems to be this idea of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, and there seem to be three things: Chote Bal Yakrev, Chote Bal Yista, and then you have the idea of it being Lifnim. And shofar is a quasi lifnim, because it is lezikaron. What's not at all obvious in the Rishonim, I'll just mention this to you now. If you haven't seen it yet, you should take a look. Is what's the relationship between the three answers? Once we say this new idea called lifnim, which the shofar has, what about the other two? Are you guys with me? I'm not going too fast. What about the other two? Do you need all? Right, we started off with shofar. So the Rishonim implicitly are bothered. So shofar may be lifnim, but is a shofar bal yakriv? Is a shofar bal yisna? So this is addressed by the Rishonim. Right? Rashi is the most emphatic. What does Rashi say? Despite the Turi Evans' best efforts to force his own shot into Rashi, but what does Rashi say plain on his face?
It's not bal yakriv or bal yisna.
Right, exactly. In other words, once we get to the third answer of lifnim, Shalom al Yisrael, we don't need the other two. Right? That is enough. If you have Lifnim, you already have a problem.
What about the Aaron?
I say, because that you didn't bring in.
Or the Machta.
Yes, therefore what?
Now also you bring inside, right? No,
but it's not really like you can also read it as saying that Baal Yakir and Baal Yitna could be linked, which could get rid of the issue.
Right.
But according to Rashi, if you don't have the shofar doesn't have a problem with Baal Makrif, and it doesn't have a problem with Baal.
So good question, good heart.
And so also the Aaron, so you're saying that it's okay because it's not brought in, but that doesn't matter.
Because I don't think it just means Baal Yakrif. I think it's you're bringing for Kapara is not the same thing as Hashem himself. You know, so to speak, the Torah, so I think this is the part of the furniture, if you will.
But what I don't understand is that according to Rashi, that wouldn't matter, because if the only thing you need for it to be a problem is
for
Lifnim, and it doesn't matter if it's not Baal Makrif or Baal Misna, then the Aaron, so I understand, it's not Baal Makrif, it's not Baal Misna, but it's Lifnim. They say it's exactly the same as the shofar according to Rashi. So why?
What do you think,
Yitzi? The Aaron or the Machdar?
Well, pay close attention to what Rashi said at the end there. Kevin the Zikaron Ka'ati Kibig De Kohen Galosh Lifnim Nabi. Somehow being Zikaron makes it like the Big De Kohen, which Arkot Elayi crap. So it's sort of Rashi.
No, but he's saying is once you have no. It sounds like what Rashi's saying is once you have lifnim, that takes care of everything. Just like the Kohen Gadol's beged is.
But how so, right? Kevan is a grown kati ki big de kohen gadol shel lifnim.
Shel lifnim, not shel makriv or shel misnah. Shel lifnim damit. So the only problem is that it's lifnim.
Well, but then why say kevan is ki big de kohen?
Well, big de kohen is the model. Even Ula said just like the Kohen Gadol's begadim are, so too the shofar. Well, that's what I think what Yitzi is trying to allude to, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like, honestly, like, I don't know.
It's a good question. Let's leave it for now as a Tzarachi, and it's a good Hara and Rashi.
It's well into the Gemara to say each category is required, meaning you need all three to be an issue.
I think that if I was reading the Gemara on my own, that's what I would have thought. The problem is that then what about shofar? Because shofar...
Rashi.
Right, so shofar saying it's not the... So it sounds like if you have lifnim... Right, so once you have lifnim, according to Rashi, that's something significant. Because that's all, it seems from Rashi, that's all shofar has, and it would be a problem.
Because he compares him to the big dick of Huna because of his Zikaron and Huna.
Okay, that's, yes, that's right, that's what Yitzi, yes, you're agreeing with Yitzi, that's fine. I'm not convinced, I'm not sure. I think it's a good aura, it's something to think about a little bit more. I just want to note that Tosfos and the Ritva address are the other two Rishonim that address this as well. Tosfos does not address the issue of Baal Yakriv, but Tosfos just does address the issue of Baal Yisna'eh. And what does Tosfos say? You remember? Doesn't you remember? Let's look at Tosfos. It's the one liner. It's an easy line. Chote v'gabe shofar. In other words, you can be adorned by the way you dress, and you're the voice.
We discussed this in the bench yesterday, that mitzvahs lavna hana nitlu.
We're not talking about personal hana. We're talking about the way you adorn.
Yeah,
You beautify yourself. It doesn't mean you're getting hanah from it. That's a separate issue. We're going to get to issues of hanah on the shofar later.
The shofar itself is not a mitzvah. The heft is needed for the mitzvah. Can we assume, therefore, there's hanah in the heft itself? Without the mitzvah.
Again, you're reading in the word hanah. Hisnah is not hanah. Hisnah is to beautify or adorn yourself. It doesn't mean, it's not the same thing as getting benefit from.
Is what you're saying is a made of benefit?
I don't think so. Okay, we can think about it more. We can talk about it more. We can even agree to disagree. But I don't think so. I think it means that just the big day kahuna are beautifying the Kohen Gadol, so it has to be things that the person is bringing in to beautify himself. We would have thought it's something physical, says Tosfos. No, even the nice, pleasant sound of the shofar is enough to be considered that type of yisna'ah. The Ritva doesn't explain. The Ritva doesn't give the reason that that's why, but the Ritva just says bali hisnaos. The shofar is also bali hisnaos. So there's also, you know, so to speak, to make you beautiful. I didn't put it on the sheet, but the Tosfos Rid actually says that it's the loud sound. Right? The loud sound, somehow, you know, you're announcing yourself, so to speak, and I guess in a dramatic way, or I'm reading a little bit into it, but something to that effect. The Ritva is very intriguing, because the Ritva, even though he just says it is Yisna'ah, he didn't say more than that. Anyone catch the Ritva discusses Bal Yakriv? And the Ritva there says, not only is it Lehisna'os, but it's also Leheiratzos El Adonav. What's the Shorsh? What's Leheiratzos? That's a halacha category known as Ritzui. What does Ritzui mean? Ritzui is to entreat. The Rishonim discuss it. The Shanabed guys did this last year with Lulav, that the Lulav is, the Ritva famously in Sukkah says the Lulav is for Ritzui. That's the Ritva on Mitzvah Baba Avera, to jog some people's memory if you were in the Chabura last year when they learned Mitzvah Baba Avera. So, Sezva, here, the shofar is not only Lehisnaos, but Leheiratzos. Now, that was not a term that was even in the Gemara. Some Achronim assume that the Ritva is interpolating that term, that that's in essence the same thing as Bayakriv. Why do we makriv anything? Why are we bringing a karbon? For the purpose of Ritzui, for entreating Hashem, for getting forgiveness. If that's the correct reading of the Ritva, so then the Ritva's Chiddush is that the shofar is also Bayakriv. It is Bayakriv. What do you mean it's not an offering? We're offering the sound of the shofar. We're offering the mitzvah to Hashem, since it's there to accomplish a kapara, just like the purpose of the karbanos or other things, therefore maybe it would be balyakrav. So comes out again, the simple reading of Rashi is lifnim is enough to create a problem. The other Rishonim either try to get lihisnaos or maybe even the other one balyakrav into it. I'm just going to give me, if you give me one more minute, I'll just mention the following. If you haven't seen this, if you're interested, it's just really fascinating. I put two things of Shulchan Aruch just to widen the discussion on the sheet. Two other examples, which would be probably surprising to people, of Ein Kategor Nasos and Egor, which are really very fascinating. One is, there's a Gemara that says, if a Kohen kills somebody, he's not allowed to duchen. The Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah argue, is that only if he killed B'med, or even if he killed Shogeg. They also argue, what about if he did Tshuva? The Shulchan Aruch is a machmir, even if the Kohen killed the Shogeg, even if he did Tshuva. Why? So Tosfos and Yavamo says, the Mishnah Berurah that I put on the sheet quotes this, because according to the Shulchan Aruch, it's Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. It's not a punishment. Even it might have been a Shogeg, he might have done Tshuva. It's not a punishment. But the hands that killed, Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, they can't be the instrument of Birkas Kohanim. Fascinating. Why do I say it's fascinating? I mean, aside from that, there's what to talk about on this, but that's not lifnim. I'm in alon shvut. I'm not bifnim. I'm duchening in London on the Gimel Regalim. That's really not lifnim. Number one. Number two is Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya quotes from the Sefer HaChassidim. Let's say you had parchment that was used for Avodah Zarah, and then you scratched off the Avodah Zarah incantations or whatever. And then you used it for a sefer. Let's say it's, you know, sefer Tanakh, sefer Torah, or something. So the Shulchan Aruch has two opinions: whether if rishuma eino nikar, you totally erased it, you can't see any semblance of the avodah zarah, is it still a problem or not? So one opinion says it's okay once you can no longer see the avodah zarah, you've expunged it, it's okay. The yeshomer of the Shulchan Aruch, for sifrei tefillah, for davening, for turning it into a sitter, you shouldn't use it even if einan reshuman nikar, even if there's no semblance of the text left. And again, the question is, what happened? Isn't that not bifnim? Now, who also widened the discussion on our daf? Maybe some of you saw this. The Ritva. What was the Ritva's thing that he brought out of nowhere? Who saw it? Right? What if you have, right? You know, you ever see some Hasidic Rebbes, they put gold on their talis? Or some people put silver on their atara, but gold is usually safe for Rebbes. So Ritva says it's okay. Even on Yom Kippur, it's okay. Why? Because you're Bachutz, you're davening, wherever you're davening. You could be in Mezhebez, you could be in Bells, you could be in Ger, you could be in, I don't know, wherever. Ukraine, right? Uman, that's still not Bifnim. And yet, these other examples talk about a in Kategor Nasa Senegor, even Bifnim. I quoted for you on the page that Rabbi Kiva Eger says there's a minug, which probably most of you have heard of. There's a minug, Adiyom Azeh, most people will make sure not to wear gold on Yom Kippur in their clothing. That people don't wear gold cufflinks and the like. Why? Ein kategor nasa sanegor. What do you mean? The Ritva said it has to be bifnim. I mean, the Gemara said it has to be bifnim. The Ritva mentioned that about the talis. You have all these examples of things where you have some poskim or minhagim, even though it's not bifnim. So I'll just leave you with the following thought, not about the clothing, but let's say about duchening, perkas kohanim, and the svarim. Think about the difference. Anyone want to tell me the difference between that and a shofar shalpara or gold and any other, the gold clothing on the Kohen Gadol? Yeah, what's the difference, fundamentally?
Could we dafka on, like, during Yimei Ratzon, there's more of a dispensation for Kohen Gadol members than anyways?
It's more of a problem, you mean?
No, because Yimei Ratzon, Hashem's willing to turn the other way.
So only if it's Bifnim it's a problem, but during the year...
The problem is that we don't have Hashem.
Right, okay, right. Think of a fundamental difference. With this, we're going to conclude. What's a fundamental difference between the case of shofar shalpara, let's say, which is our classic example of the problem of Ein Kategor Nasa Senegor, but only if it's bifnim, and the Kohen Gadol who killed, and the scroll, the cloth of Avodah Zarah? Those two are similar in one way, that the shofar shalpara is fundamentally different. Anyone think?
But isn't the paradigm of King Kategor Nasa Senegor really the Big Day Kohen Gadol?
Okay, good. So let's put the Big Day Kohen Gadol and the Shofar Shapara on one side, which are both problematic according to the Gemara because they're Bifnim. And then we have these other two examples, the Berkas Kohanim and the Klaf of Avodah Zarah, which are not Bifnim. And at least according to some people, that's the reason for their problem. Yeah?
You can say the Berkas Kohanim and it works a little bit less for Klaf, but at least for the Kohen, himself is the guy.
Yes! Yes! Why does that work less for the cloth?
Because the cloth...
The cloth itself was for Avodah Zarah.
Yeah, but the cloth didn't, like, do anything.
So what? Oh, come on!
But
no, go for it! You got it!
Yeah, so
come on, man, no false modesty, you got it!
The client himself...
Fundamental difference. I think this is something to think about. I think this is the correct answer, I believe. At least one correct answer. There's a difference between when we're talking about the object of the Avera itself, whether they're your hands, right, which are the object of bracha in the Birkas Kohanim. These hands have blood on them. So how could you use that? Forget, that's already a problem. Bifnim, not bifnim, inside, outside, far away. The cloth was from Avodah Zarah. It's inherently disqualified. As opposed to a shofar shalpara, this little cow, this little shepsula that was wandering around somewhere in Israel, which we shechted and we took off its horn and we made it a shofar. What does that got to do with the egel thousands of years ago? It's a facsimile. It's a recollection of the egel. So for that, which is so far removed, for that to be a problem, you need all these qualifications, ultimately the lefnim. But when you're talking about not a facsimile, not just something that's that reminds Hashem of the problem, but the thing itself, so that's in your face to God, an insult, whether you're bifnim or you're not bifnim. And again, just if you want to think about it in a very down-to-earth mashal, again, imagine a couple where you had, you know, something that the wife betrayed her husband. Right, and they're trying to make up the relationship. So if she showed up with a watch that the other guy gave her, while she's trying to entreat her husband to forgive her. Right? Ein kategor nasa sanegor. Right? They're trying to have this intimate moment to try to rehabilitate the relationship, like shofar at Rosh Hashanah. And you're going to bring in something that's absolutely reminiscent. So if it's not, you know, if some symbol of that extramarital relationship was a chves, a watch. So maybe it's not the same watch, or it looks like, you know, it looks like it. So if you're trying to make up and you remind him in that intimate, tender moment, you remind him of the betrayal, you're going to have a problem. But if it's the actual watch, it could be 10 years later and it's going to set him off. Because that is the actual simon of the betrayal. So I think that's the distinction as well. The whole idea of bithnim is, especially on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, is that relationship to remind him of our betrayal with Chet HaEgel. So again, if it's the actual Egel, it could be anywhere, it would be a bad reminder. But if it's just a facsimile of it, something that might remind Hashem of it, so that's only in those most tender, intimate moments. All right? Yeshakoyach, everybody.